The recording has been restarted also at 9:28. Dr. Bastillo.
We are now on to case 2131 and its subsequent case 2228. Stephen Kempton, is Stephen on the line?
Yes, I am.
Great, thank you. And I believe your attorney is with us as well.
I'm here and he is in my office, so I'm going to mute my microphone and move over to his camera, okay?
Thank you.
And Dr. Bustillo, this is a case that I have been recused from as well, so I'm going to mute and turn off my video.
Thank you.
Does that mean we don't have a quorum?
We have
three.
If we have a total of three, you're right, we don't have a quorum. Four is necessary for a quorum. So we will have to continue this matter either till Mr. Barton appears or to the next meeting.
No, and that would be the same situation then with case 2211.
Okay. Thanks, Giovanni.
Yeah, no problem.
Mr. Harris, I don't think we can even move to continue them. We just automatically continue them, right?
That is correct.
Okay.
Veronica, if we can just let the minutes reflect that the board lost quorum with the recusal of Giovanni for matters 9C and E.
Will do, Mark.
Thank you.
Mark,
all right.
Mark, are we dismissed now or what?
I'll defer to Judy. I don't know if we've heard from Mr. Barton, if he has not.
We've been attempting to call, text, matters.
I hope he's okay.
Judy, I'll defer to you. On how you'd like to proceed.
In the off chance that he shows up, it would be fantastic to move these cases forward. So we do anticipate a very short meeting. So if you have the ability to wait to see if he does show, that's fine. If you cannot, we will just move it forward to the next meeting.
My client could, but I cannot because I have other matters this morning. That's my problem. So,
okay. Well, then at this point, it appears that we'll just have to move this forward to the next meeting.
I'm sorry. I hope Mr. Barton is okay. I really do. So we'll hang up and we'll see you very soon. And I can talk with Mark about, I know that one of the things I want to say that everyone on the board, including my client, is wondering is where is the evaluation on Mr. Kempton? And so we're going to call right after this meeting and try and figure out. He's not really allowed to confer with the evaluator.
Kim, I don't mean to interrupt, but because we've lost quorum, we probably shouldn't be, talking about.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to just tell the board we're looking into that today, and I'll communicate with Judy, and she can communicate with the board about what I find. I'm hanging up now. Thank you.
Hello, this is AP, and I apologize if I'm speaking out of term. I'm a part of this case, and I just want to make sure I understand properly that it will be moved to the December meeting, that we won't be conducting a meeting today, correct?
Correct. Yes.
Yes, that is correct. We cannot continue because we do not have quorum on the board.
Okay, thank you so much. I just wanted to double check and clarify that I understood properly.
Yeah, you should be notified for the next meeting.
Okay, thank you. Well, I hope you all have a great day. Thank you.
Psh,
sure this is in the record already, but it's Giovanni's fault.
Mm-hmm.
No, I know too many people.
A busy social calendar of yours.
Okay, so I guess we will move on here to case 2225, Jacob Berndl. Do we have Judy or Mindy?
That would be me.
Okay.
I believe Mr. Berndl is on the call as well.
Yes, I'm present.
Thank you. So the initial review of case 2225 for Jacob Berndl PT was presented to the board on at the board's 10/25/2022 meeting, October 25th, 2022 meeting, wherein the board instructed the staff to negotiate a consent agreement with Mr. Berndl to enter into a substance abuse monitoring program for a period of 5 years. Terms of the agreement were to incorporate the recommendations of Mr. Berndl's evaluator, which include counseling and recovery programs, as well as the standard provisions. Staff was also directed to return the signed consent agreement for the board to review and possible approval at its November 15th, 2022 meeting. Mr. Berndl has signed that drafted consent agreement, and it was included within your packet. The board may choose to accept, reject, or take other action.
Since Mr. Greer, I move to accept the consent agreement.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay. I think we can vote on that.
Okay. It has been moved and seconded to accept the proposed consent agreement. Dr. Basile?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
And Mr. Barton is still absent. Motion passes.
Great. Thank you. Good luck with your program.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And then we will move on to case 2224, Jonelle Wartenberg. And is this with Mindy or Judy?
This would be with me. So on July 19th, 2022, the board executed an interim order for substance abuse evaluation. The order required Ms. Wartenberg to complete a substance abuse evaluation by an addictionologist within 60 days. It was sent via email, regular, and certified mail on September 20th, 2022. To date, an addictionologist's name has not been submitted to the board staff, nor has a substance abuse evaluation been completed in accordance with the order. An outline of staff contact with Ms. Wartenberg was included in your packet. And the matter is now for your review.
I'll just let the board members know that Ms. Wartenberg is attending, and I just saw in her chat that she said she can't hear the proceedings.
She can't hear the proceedings?
That's what her notice said.
Okay, so Ms. Wartenberg, your frame is indicating that you are in companion mode, that somehow you've joined twice. So my suggestion would be to hang up and rejoin the meeting.
We probably should message her that. If she can't hear us, then telling her that isn't any good.
Very good point.
She said she is reading the captions.
Can someone ask her to?
She yeah. said she, she's gonna just responded. She's going to hang up now and recall.
Perfect.
Thank you for watching those notes, Mindy.
Sure.
It takes a team.
This was
it looks like she's back with us.
Your Can microphone you hear us is now? Muted.
Oh.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Would you be willing to answer some questions, Ms. Wartenberg?
Yes.
So I guess our biggest question so far is, have you been able to secure a counselor for evaluation?
So I have not, and I actually just sent Judy an email of the proof of the alcohol screening that I did have earlier this year. I've been in compliance with the court, and I will be doing some counseling. However, their counseling center is really backed up here. And so they have an appointment for me on December 7th for intake. But I've tried to contact the counseling centers up here, which I did submit, I guess, was not approved. And it has to be approved by the board. It wasn't approved, so I have been trying to find, you know, someone, if they even know what an addictionologist is. But I've tried to message numerous counselors, doctors in the Valley, even. I live in Cholo in the White Mountains, so there's very limited resources up here, but I'm kind of at a loss of how to get that done. The ones that I did get in contact with said that they're not willing to perform an evaluation like that. So I've tried my best, but like I said, I am in compliance with the court as well on this, and I do have to take some counseling for that. So for the DUI. I feel like I've been in contact, so I've just kind of trying to keep you guys updated that I'm looking. I'm not sure how to find that.
Judy, is there some sort of process that people go through to be an approved provider for some of these things? Is it maybe just that this is not somebody that the board knows about?
It's not typically a list that our board maintains. However, the medical board does have a list of providers. Ms. Wartenberg has been directed to the medical board a number of times. They do have a list of providers. There have been other individuals who have used that list and found a provider to perform this type of an evaluation.
Ms. Champion, has that list been sent to, I'm sorry, I'm trying to find that list. I don't see it on the medical board's website.
I did a search too and contacted some of those doctors, and I've not had any replies. So I've attempted to call numerous ones to actually speak with a person, and they said they don't perform something like that. And like I said, there was a counseling center here. They said that they feel they're more than qualified to do something like that. However, when I submitted it, it was not approved.
That particular provider
up here, but they don't. Change Point does not do that, and Change Point's the one that I actually have to do my the hours of counseling for, but they don't have an addictionologist, and the other one said they were not approved. So
Judy, to answer my question, is that list available?
It is.
Where is it?
Mr. Greer, I will have to find it.
And I do wish. Oh, sorry. I wish I was able to make it to the last board meeting where that this was decided. I do want to bring up, I know that this was requested because I had two charges. Not that it makes it any better, but they were both two holidays, and I do live in a small town. If that's something I still need to comply with, I don't see it as it's unfortunate and it shouldn't have happened, but it's just when, once you have one, you're kind of just harassed. But it was a holiday, and so I think I did send what the actual charges were. It was a .08 misdemeanor, which only takes three drinks within an hour on an empty stomach to achieve a .08. But as far as needing an addictionologist, I've done the alcohol screening. They didn't find a reason for me to do counseling, but it was required by the judge, as with any DUI.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, Judy looks for that list that is provided by the medical board, I think we all, just as a reminder, that list is just not exclusive. The professional is more than welcome to submit anybody that she thinks is qualified, and Judy and board staff will review that person's credentials to ensure that they're qualified to perform the evaluation requested by the board. So, in addition to any list that may be promulgated by other state agencies, she is free to submit the name of any other person she deems qualified to perform the evaluation.
So in that case, Ms. Wartenberg, is that something that you've had an opportunity to submit, the person that you said you did find? Or is that something?
Yeah, I submitted the card. I'm sorry. What did you say?
Oh, just saying, is that something you could potentially still do?
Yeah, there's only one other counseling center here. And so I can speak with them, or I can submit once I've completed the other counseling. And I did email Judy the proof that I had the alcohol screening. I'm not sure if it had the scoring on there, but I did send that. I sent it this morning.
And I would just add that if Ms. Wartenberg is going to submit the name of an individual, to submit as much information regarding their qualifications to perform the evaluation.
It was listed right next to their name and all of their titles, if that's what you.
Yeah, just as much information as possible.
Was that person that you're going to be seeing approved by the courts?
So that actually was just, I'm going through ChangePoint for the courts, and they're the ones that did not have an addictionologist. And so that person was, I just found and submitted for the board, for the physical therapy board.
Okay, so just recently you submitted that?
No, that was actually a couple months ago that I sent that. And I've been trying since to find, like I said, I'm just kind of confused if people don't seem to know what that is. I did look on the medical board yesterday. I did look online for actual, I don't even know if it's a thing. It didn't seem legit, actually, but it did say addictionologist list. And I sent them a message. However, I don't know if it was an advertisement thing. I don't think it was legit, like I said. Yeah. There are counselors at the ChangePoint. It's a local center, mostly for behavioral kids. They kind of help out. I've worked with them for that because I also work with disabled children through DDD. But, I'll be completing that. So I don't know if you guys would accept that, or if you do want me to go to someone separate and have that evaluation.
And I will tell you, the board takes these issues very, very seriously. And there's at least for me, there's a great deal of discomfort that you don't appear to be taking this as seriously as we want you to. May not be someone in Cholo. You may need to come to Maricopa County or Flagstaff to get this done. And this is a very serious issue. We will do what we can to provide you with the resources, but this is something that needs to be done, and at least I'm very disappointed that it hasn't been done already. Judy, any luck on that list?
So, Mr. Greer, all of the state agencies have been going through website changes and website updates. They did have a list prior to this. One of the cases heard earlier today was processed at the same time as this case, and that individual found that list and proceeded with the same guidance that was offered to Ms. Wartenberg. But as I'm listening to this, I'm not able to find it swiftly. But what I can do, if the board would like, is I can certainly get a hold of the medical board if I cannot find it on their website and obtain that list and send it directly to Ms. Wartenberg if that is what's preceded. The individual that was submitted on the business card, that business card was included in your packet. You did see it. The reason that individual was not approved was that it did not meet the qualifications outlined in the interim order.
Okay. I'm going to make a motion. I'm going to move to extend the time for Ms. Wartenberg to comply with the interim order for additional 60 days beginning today. And then with that, I'm going to instruct staff to provide Ms. Wartenberg with the name of at least one individual that we believe is qualified to provide these services. I'm thinking about the person that we did with the last case. I know we could provide that today. If you have more, you can. But I really want to impress upon, this is your responsibility and it needs to get done. And if it doesn't work with the person the board suggests, you need to find somebody, and this is very serious. And so that's my motion.
And second that.
If I could just speak really quick, I don't want you to think that I don't think this is serious at all. I've tried my best. I'm now working back in Sholo full-time. I was traveling to Wilcox, working 410s there, and then working here. So I was trying my best to reach out via email just so I could get some replies. But I believe I've diligently been working on this. So I appreciate the continuing.
And that's why we're giving you some more time. But
thank you.
It needs to get done.
Yes, thank you. I will get it done.
Madam Chair, members of the board, Mr. Greer, I don't know if you'd like to consider perhaps adding to your motion, if not completed within that new 60 days, to either invite in for informal or maybe remanded to formal hearing for failure to comply, just to keep the case moving forward.
I accept that suggestion and will amend my motion accordingly if the second will approve.
Yeah, I approve.
Mr. Greer, would you move this to an informal or directly to a formal hearing?
I would move it directly to a formal hearing.
Thank you.
I would agree with that recommendation as well. Do you have any feelings on that, Dr. Hike?
In reviewing the case, yes, I would agree as well. I think it's super important, and because two incidences, even though they were holidays, if it was a small town, I would walk. So, yeah, I think there's options available that could have been done. They obviously didn't occur that way, but two strikes.
Yes. Definitely a big lesson learned.
Any further discussion? Okay. I think we're ready to call the motion, Judy.
It's been moved and seconded to extend the time frame to comply with the board's interim order by another 60 days from the date of today's meeting. and to require staff to provide an options for an acceptable provider for the evaluation. If Ms. Wartenberg does not comply with the allowed time, the matter will be moved to a formal hearing. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Hike, or Dr. Hike, excuse me?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton is still absent. Motion passes.
So it sounds like staff should be contacting you, Ms. Wartenberg, with a name that you can contact and hopefully get this done very quickly.
Thank you. I'd appreciate it. I'll go anywhere if I have to.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good. Best of luck in getting this done.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
And I think I saw that Sarah Gomez had joined the meeting. Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I was here originally, and then the monitoring company kind of called me, so I left and then came back just to see if somebody did return and we could get a quorum on the motion for me.
Unfortunately, it doesn't appear that we have a chief quorum for this. I'm very sorry.
It's understandable.
Yeah, so we'll have to postpone this till our December meeting.
Okay. No problem.
It's my fault, Sarah.
That's okay. Like you said, you're just too popular.
Right. Well, thank Perfect. You for well, your understanding.
You. Absolutely. You, we'll see you next month.
Great. Okay. Well, that concludes that part of our business here. We're on to board business and reports in the executive director's report.
Yes. And that executive director is making some notes feverishly. Okay. So the first issue that we are bringing forward is based in the renewal responses that we've received thus far, and staff is looking for a little bit of direction as to how the board would like us to proceed. This is the first time staff, as it is right now, has encountered this situation. There is a question on the application that includes that reads, have you had a malpractice judgment against you, or do you have a lawsuit currently pending for malpractice? In certain cases, we've received affirmative responses to this, but those same individuals, the board has not received any type of complaint whatsoever. It's a malpractice suit. Examples of some of the responses are included in your packet. So if a complaint has not been filed with the board, we are requesting direction on how to proceed with the renewal disclosures as have been identified. And it's noted that the National Practitioner Data Bank, when there is a malpractice suit and when there is a payment, that insurance company is required to report that. And then we do receive a copy of those reports. They may not list a variety of information, but at that point, it indicates that a payment has been paid out, and it's specific pretty much based on what I've read on the NPDB site. It's pretty specific to a practitioner. So there are certain circumstances when it's against a hospital or something like that, they're not required to report it. But in cases when it is against a practitioner, they do report it. So we're looking to see how you want us to proceed. At this point, we are simply waiting to find out if we get a complaint or if we get documentation that a malpractice suit has been settled in some fashion. But if you want us to do something else, that's what we want to know.
Judy, I'm sorry. Did you get those immediately, or is there like a timeline? So are you getting them timely?
It depends on when the insurance companies report it. So once it's placed into the NPDB, I feel we get it pretty readily, but it's just, you know, the wheels of those processes take a little bit of time to turn. So and even that, the suits in general, they can, you know, go on for years in some cases. So there's really no way to know that. I do feel that I can say, though, that when it is reported, we do get a timely report from NPDB directly. Okay. And again, just to clarify, if we got a complaint on these same issues, of course, it would process through as any complaint. But these particular cases, we have not received a complaint at all.
As you've received some of these, I mean, are any of the accusations related to the suit, you know, like egregious things that we would think we need to potentially, you know, file a complaint against? Or
for the reporting purposes of it, we don't necessarily get a list of the allegations. If it were something just kind of looking into the future, the way I would see this happening is if we actually got these documents about the malpractice settlements, which they're very few and far between. But if we got a piece of documentation from a malpractice suit, and we would go back and check their, you know, their renewals along those timeframes and see if they have reported anything, we would check to see if there had been any kind of complaint about it that had been in process or handled or whatever. So we would check our files first, and then basically lacking any other information, we would just simply have to reach out to the individual licensee or certificate holder and request information about what it was about and any kind of documentation that they have. Because we don't necessarily get those details.
Yeah, maybe this will help, Giovanni. Early in my investigative role, I did have a malpractice settlement. And we did get some information from the insurance that it was substandard care. So as Judy said, I reached out, and got information. I did actually subpoena the record just to look at it before I actually opened the complaint. And, you know, we as the board have to treat each matter on its own merits. So, you know, even if it was a nominal amount, you know, $5,000 or whatever, if it looks like it rises to the level of a potential violation, I would open a complaint.
Yeah. No, that would be
after it would be after it was settled. I you know, we have a lot of folks that are saying that they're in the process of a lawsuit, but it hasn't been settled.
Yeah, I mean, depending on what
the situation is. And again, those can take years.
Depending on the situation within there, you know, and if the board's not reviewing each one of them, then my thought would be, you know, if you guys feel like it's something that needs to be brought to the board, then by all means, let's, you know, have it brought to the board. We can review it and see where to go from there. But, I mean, I would trust your guys' judgment on that for sure. If that's kind of what we're looking to figure out here is, you know, do we want you bring it to us? Do we not want you bringing it to us? I don't know if anyone else has thoughts on that.
I just think it's hard because it's, once a case has been settled, it's been so long.
Yeah.
I think that becomes our difficulty, with that, and especially if a complaint has not been filed. Certainly something that's ongoing is, more timely or at least more relevant, you know, for today, but, and we have had a couple of people who have had concurrent malpractice claims with a patient complaint. So I don't know. I kind of agree with Giovanni that if you see something, you know, bring it to our attention.
Okay, so at this point, so the way this would have to work is the only way, unless somebody self-reports it, but the only way that we would know this, and sometimes the practitioner doesn't necessarily even know that someone is engaged in discussions with their insurance company. But the only way that we know this is by asking that question on a renewal. So that means that this is only an every 2 year thing that you would even get this information unless we got a settlement notice, with the situation. So getting the settlement notice, yes, there's been time that's passed, but the documentation should still then be available. Mm-hmm. If we're proceeding in the absence of a complaint, everything is just kind of hanging in limbo, you know? Unless we found something pretty egregious or we had heard about it. And again, if we get a patient complaint, of course it comes and of course it's fully investigated.
Right.
The specific with these is a complaint has not been waged with the board. The individual who is initiating the malpractice suit is not in contact with the board, is not claiming anything, and we have no way of knowing who those people are. So in reality, what I'm hearing you say is unless we got something specific written on the renewal, in most cases, until we got documentation that there actually was a case, there actually was a settlement because some issue was found, whether that was just to dismiss the case or something, we don't know. But it would be at that time that we would then likely bring it forward.
Yeah. Well, from a historical perspective, it's curious that it's even listed on the renewal as a question. I mean, it must be there for a reason. I don't know the historical perspective as to why that's asked at each renewal. And I don't know if other boards ask the same question.
It's really on all the applications. It's on the initial applications as well. It's rare that we get a yes answer to it, but it is a question that's asked, and I would probably point then to the rules where somewhere in the rules it identifies that we need to ask that question. So, and because with the renewals, then everybody is required then to answer those questions within the confines of that 2 year period. With respect to, you know, has anything new happened? So it's on the renewals because it's on the originals, I believe. And it's just kind of a checkup, if you will, to say, hey, has anything changed in this arena?
So point of order. And along those lines, a separate question. If, as a board member, an individual knows that there has been a change in someone's status, like a medical status, for example, what should be the procedure as a board member if that individual answered yes or no, that a medical status change has occurred for that person? Does that board member need to report that or bring that to the attention of the board? So I guess, Dr. Harris, that's questions for you. If you understand the question,
I'm not sure that I do understand the question specifically. Are you asking that if a board member becomes aware of information related to a licensee, what is their duty to report it?
That's correct.
I think you should absolutely have a conversation with Judy regarding, you know, whatever the information is. And then depending upon how it plays out, it may lead to another conversation on whether or not you would be able to participate in any matters that might come before the board involving that individual.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm new at this. So
no, great question.
It's not a question. it didn't occur to me in orientation to ask that question.
So then, unless staff gets particularly egregious information that we feel needs to be brought to the board in the interim, what I'm hearing you say is that we proceed in the manner that we've been proceeding. We wait to get additional information. And then at that time, we investigate fully, since we would have something to investigate at that time.
That would be my thought, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that accurate? Yeah. Okay. Mr. Harris, do we need to vote on any of this, or is this just...
You know, I think it probably is nice to memorialize the direction the board's giving you in the event that it, you know, needs to be modified in the future. We can take what was moved today for modification.
Okay. Do we need to make like an official motion then? And
please. Yeah. Thank you, Giovanni.
Okay. I would move in regard to the malpractice questions on the renewal application. If anything, you know, out of the ordinary or egregious appears, that board staff bring it to the attention of the board. Otherwise, proceed as currently handling those situations. Does that kind of cover everything?
So in the absence of a complaint having been filed, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Well, and the discussion is somewhat moot if there is a complaint filed.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? Okay. I think we can vote on that then.
Okay. So let's see if I got this all down. So regarding the malpractice questions on a renewal, in the absence of a complaint, any egregious reports, matters that are reported should be brought to the board's attention for further action. Does that sound accurate?
Sounds right.
Okay. Dr. Basile?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yeah.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Who passes? Okay. The next matter is the continuing competence audit process update. So we are moving right along with the audits. There were 158 audit letters sent out on October 24th via certified mail. They were also followed up with a copy sent via regular mail. As of this morning, we are currently standing with 73 submissions that have been found to be compliant. There are 7 submissions for which we've asked for additional or clarifying information. There are 35 as of the beginning of this meeting. There's probably more now. Submissions awaiting processing. So that sum total, those numbers have changed since I last totaled it, but we are looking at roughly, if I'm accurate, we've got in the arena of 40 individuals, or give or take, that we have not yet heard from. The plan in those instances is to reach out. Haven't decided yet. It'll be based on numbers, but whether that will be a blast email or a directed email or in some fashion trying to get a hold of them, because certified mail, they may or may not have picked it up. The regular mail, they should have gotten it if their address is correct. So it would just be a case of following up with those individuals. So that's where we stand. It's moving along. We're hoping to finish that up before next month's meeting, that would be fantastic. But to be continued with further updates, I guess, next month. Any questions on that?
Great job to all you guys.
Lots of work.
Here's hoping. Yes. it's a lot of certificates submitted upside down, sideways, halfway visible.
I hope you guys have Adobe Acrobat.
It has come in more handy than I could even that and every other trick to be able to manipulate and access files. really is helpful. So, and then moving on further, we've got the financials. If you've got any questions about that, I have my spreadsheet up and I'm ready to go.
I think we skipped number 3.
Did we? Oh. Yeah. My apologies. Oh, annual meeting review. Yes, Mr. Greer. Mr. Greer did a fantastic job representing this board and public members in general. The meeting session was really engaging, and I think it brought to mind a lot of information for a lot of people, myself included. The overall of the annual meeting itself was informative as always. There was a lot of talk about telehealth. There was a lot of talk about the new Model Practice Act that they're working on and anticipate finalizing soon. It was, if any of you have ever attended an FSBPT meeting, you know that they keep you busy from morning till night. They keep you fed incessantly. They really present just about as much as possible. If somebody has not been to an FSBPT meeting, we need to get you there. And it's informative, it's engaging, and it's a lot of ability to talk to people that are in your similar situation from different states, and the distinction or the differences between the different states is sometimes astounding. There's a lot of similarities, but there are a lot of differences as well. And with that, I would love to give Mr. Greer an opportunity to share his experience.
I echo a lot of Judy's experience. It was very, very informative. I gained about 12 pounds. I would encourage anyone to participate in the, I don't know if they even do it online, but they were doing it online for several years, the regulatory board member training. It's not that we've outsourced our board member training to the FSBPT. It's just an additional resource, and it's completely free. It's usually over a couple of days in August in Virginia, but definite opportunity. No other follow-ups from the annual meeting. I did attend the PT Compact annual meeting as well on Sunday morning, and nothing really interesting there. They need to sell more PT Compact privileges, but that's a them problem, not an us problem right now. So.
How'd your talk go?
Apparently it went really well. Good. It was more of a panel discussion. Mm. But you know me, I tend to dominate. There's me and the gal in the end. We tend to talk more than everyone else. So.
And they ask you for an encore?
What?
They ask you for an encore?
Not yet.
I do believe if anybody has the time and ability to listen, I do believe if you were to log into your FSBPT account, which reminds me, Dr. Hike, we might have to get you connected to that. But the annual meeting sessions are generally recorded and placed there. So that would be something if you're interested in accessing it. But all in all, a successful meeting, and Just like Mr. Greer mentioned, I highly suggest the board member and administrator training. It's a really good training. They do it virtually. They do keep you engaged. So it is a weekend, but they do keep you engaged. They do a lot of small, at least the last one that I attended, they do a lot of small group kind of interactions. So I will keep you posted. You all should be getting those emails on a regular basis. Do you get them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If not, I'll forward them and make sure that they have your accurate address to get you that information. But it's a resource. It's a resource on a lot of levels. So feel free to use it. So then moving forward after that, now we're at the financials and my spreadsheet is still open. So any questions?
No.
Yeah. Okay. The licenses and certificates continue to flow. We have a lot of 80 to be exact new licenses and certificates in the month of October. Reinstatements, of course, after any renewal season, the reinstatements tend to bounce up. So those are being handled. Business entity registrations are kind of at a lull, which is anticipated. Next year they will renew it at the August timeframe. And the telehealth registrations, they tend to go up and down a little bit. We don't get a lot of them, but they do take some processing. What we're noticing with those telehealth registrations is a lot of the individuals applying for that are doing the same thing in pretty much every state in the union. So there's a lot of verifications that have to go with those kind of processes. And so that's a lot to move through, a lot for them to submit to us in terms of those verifications. And then a lot for us to move through. So, and there are some technicalities with telehealth as well. Written into the statute, there's just a certain number that they have to raise above before they need to register. So I think it's 10 a year encounters. So. And then any questions on the licenses or certificates this month? Oops, Mr. Leone has left the meeting. I anticipate he'll rejoin in just a moment.
Judy, I do have a question.
Sure.
I've had a number of students reach out to me and say that it's been taking a really long time to get approved to either take the MPTE or the AZ law exam. Can you help me understand that?
Right. So the way that the process goes is everything before approval is granted for an exam, everything has to be submitted. So you've got an individual who is registering for the exam. In a lot of cases, they don't even submit an application because they figure that they've registered. They said they want to test through Arizona and there it goes. Also, and I believe this occurred in December, and Dr. Hike, you might know about this as well. When students are testing prior to graduation, we have to get the documentation from the schools, and all of that has to occur before the testing deadlines. Not to mention the fact that exam eligibility is granted only after the application is complete, including all documentation. So that includes everything that they need to send to us. One of the things that we're experiencing in high quantities right now is a lot of the information is submitted based on an image of it. So it would be a JPEG image in most cases. Okay. However, there's a new technology with iPhones that puts it in no pun intended, HEIC. It's a hike. It's a hike format, which the system allows you to upload to the application, but it's not visible. So in each of those cases, we have to go back to the individual, get the documentation, okay, have it submitted. The system that we're on right now, Salesforce, doesn't have any easy way for somebody to resubmit information after the application was submitted. We were in the process of changing that, of setting something up, but when the state informed us that we're changing systems, all of those types of improvements of the existing system came to a screeching halt. They weren't going to spend any more time or effort or money on making those changes. So if anything is deficient, it has to come to us via email.
Okay.
That presents another set of problems with respect to, I find it curious in today's world that there's somebody will have one name on an application, but their email is a different name. And it may come from another email. So
right,
if something is not seen or has surpassed, you know, has somehow fallen through the cracks, even searching for the documentation, you might not be able to find it if it's not matching up with the name or with the email that you expect it to match up with. So there's a lot of those kind of glitches kind of built into the system. We're hoping that our new system, one of the things we've been told is that if an area is deficient, we can literally open that section of the application up to let them resubmit something. So that takes a whole lot of the influx into an inbox. And then those same people will call and call and call and email and email and email, which in effect just compiles thousands of emails.
Got it.
So it's all of those kinds of issues. Then coming off of the renewal system, there certainly was a backlog through the July, August. There was certainly a backlog just trying to process all of that information. So we are working at that. If somebody is stuck, if somebody is not getting a response, have them contact me directly and we'll dig through, we'll see what's going on. But we are absolutely working to get all of that information. In the offing, we will hope to have another person, potentially if we can shoehorn another person into our allowed 4 FTE individuals in the agency. So we're working on all of those things, but yes, you're absolutely right. There is a lag. We are trying to overcome it. There are other reasons for those lags. It just compiles the process. So.
Dr. Bustillo, just to give you an idea, like I processed 7 applications yesterday. Out of the 7, 4 of them, they uploaded everything they were supposed to, and more than half of the documentation that they uploaded could not be seen. Therefore, their deficiency notice is full. And, you know, and then they'll call, you know, they'll send an email and say, I've already sent it. Even though we put unable to open or view, please send, you know, the following documentation. They're still stuck. They've already sent it. They've already uploaded it. So I think the applicants don't really look and read everything, because if they were to see that, it gives them a reason why we are requesting that documentation again. Okay. So 4 out of the 7 is a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much. That really helps me. I just have told everybody it's been a busy year with renewals and that you guys are working as hard as you possibly can. So,
but if they do have something that's stuck somewhere that mm-hmm. we haven't managed to see or whatever, then, you know, we can certainly take care of them. We get calls and emails day in and day out about these processes. So we're happy to look into it. We want to get them licensed. We
right.
want to move through the process. We don't want anybody stagnating anywhere. So.
Right. Perfect. Thank you very much for the update. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Any future agenda items or any other questions? I should have asked that first.
I don't know if there's a way to streamline that process in terms of all the emails and calls that you get. I'm just thinking, is there any way beforehand that there could maybe be a training or something along those lines, or I'm just kind of trying to brainstorm ideas that would make it easier so that you don't get all those calls and all those emails of question, whether it's about renewal or the early application for the NPT. There's got to be some way to set that up to make it easier on you all so you're not bombarded.
Well, we're looking into a variety of ways of assisting with that. We will forever get the phone. All of these processes make people nervous.
Right.
So even though the information is available on the website, even though we go out to the schools and present to them, which we're hoping to increase as time allows, even as we do all of that stuff, they're very nervous about all of these things. So that perpetuates, you know, we're forever going to get the email. Yes, I read everything on the website, but can you really tell me how to go about getting a license? Or, you know, yeah, I've been to that page, but I need someone to talk me through all of the steps.
And so for this, from a school perspective, we send out frequently asked questions and we walk them through everything that they need to do as well. But I think one of the things Monica said that's spot on, and Judy, you've said a similar thing, is they are not reading.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big part of it. We're hoping the new application system, which, you know, is just, it's out there in the ether right now. We don't necessarily know what we're actually going to land with or when, but we're hoping, we're remaining hopeful that that will help eliminate some of those issues. We are also looking into a FSBPT has a program that might assist with eligibility for the NPTE. I was talking to them again at the annual meeting, and what we have to do is to determine the way our statutes and rules are written, if we're even allowed to engage in such a thing. But it would help with, it would, as my understanding is, it helps with the NPTE eligibility. So in that sense, it could, in a perfect world, take off of our plate the need to approve them for the NPTE, which then says after they've taken that exam, all of the information comes to us in the form of an application. And then it's just a, you know, you have to send us complete information. We can't do it with partial information. But I think it still allows us then to retain the ability to mark them eligible for the jurisprudence exam, which is basically the final step, which is when we bring them to the board for approval. If there's something that has been, you know, basically we have to go through the application to know who to bring to the board and who not. So that AZ law exam is kind of the final piece that they can't access that until we get everything that we need. So I'm hopeful that this process with FSBPT, if it's determined that we can move forward with it based on the way our statutes and rules are, that it will still allow us to retain governance over that, so we can maintain our processes, but hopefully take some of the pre-processing off of our shoulders to have to meet those quarterly deadlines. And that's the other thing. The exam is only quarterly, so it's high stakes if they miss it, which means the calls and the emails and everything increases at those times as well, because they're nervous, they're scared, they don't want to not do what they need to do to get to the test. So
right. I know that. And so my suggestion would be, when it's appropriate, we would have that as a appropriate agenda item when we have more information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, that's coming to an agenda near you soon.
Okay, good. Thank
you. As soon as I figure out all the background I need to figure out.
Good.
Anything else? Nope. Okay, future agenda items? adjournment.
Okay. I'll make a motion that we adjourn.
Second.
It has been moved and seconded to adjourn. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone? You're muted.
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
I didn't even give you a chance to discuss that. Motion has passed. The meeting is adjourned at 10:33.
Right. Thank you.
Thanks,
happy
everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, happy Thanksgiving to you all.
I'm going to stop the recording at 10:33 as well.